So tonight is going to be an interesting, I've done a lot of research this week, so tonight is going to be educational, it's going to be illuminating, I think, and then it's going to be a challenge for us kind of corporately. You know, we live in a day and an age where holidays come and go. And if there was ever a holiday in the Christian calendar that Christians should be literally pressing in, it would be leading into Easter. So I've entitled tonight, Preparing for Easter or Resurrection Day. Now, I'm going to slay the myth tonight that the word Easter is a bad word. And I literally had to get corrected this week because I was always under the idea, I'm so glad Andy's here because, and her parents, because the most recent scholarship we're going to get to, linguist, believes that the word Easter ultimately came from Old German into English, and it's a reference to the resurrection, not the God, the fertility God, Anglo-Saxon fertility God. So we'll get there. Anyway, so it's encouraging. Because I know some of us have been told, oh, okay, you know, Easter, all this pagan stuff, right? Anyway, I'm going to slay some of those myths tonight. But anyway, I do think that Resurrection Day is, especially for people that aren't Christians. As Christians, we know what Easter means. But people out there in the culture, they know Easter as a secular holiday. So if you say Happy Easter or what are you doing for Easter, they're not thinking resurrection. So for them, we should be calling it Resurrection Day. Well, what's Resurrection Day? I'm so glad you asked. You see, you're being smart. Easter is a neutral term, right? So anyway, that's why I like to wear that shirt at Christmas time, Happy Birthday, Jesus, because it really messes with people. They're like, what's that all about? It's like, oh, you don't know? Anyway, they don't. So anyway, all right, so tonight, I'm starting, isn't Easter pagan? Because I'm not going to ask for hands because I know all of us have probably heard some version of what we're going to get into here. All right, so my previous thinking, I already told you, I thought that the word Easter was a pagan word. Now, I knew that most other languages call Easter Passover. So I was okay with that, but I was under the impression up until this week that the word Easter was a pagan word, and that I always was like a little nervous. You know, now after Natalie's roots talk, we don't want any bad roots, mm-hmm. right? So that my previous thinking was up until this week, I was thinking that Easter was a pagan word referencing an Anglo-Saxon goddess. That's where I thought the word came from. Some of you would have been told that. Actually, it was a Christian in the 800s that said that. I'll get to that. And then it was kind of repopularized in the 1800s by a very fundamentalist Presbyterian who wrote a book called Two Babylons. And a lot of this Christmas is pagan, Easter is pagan, this is pagan, it really comes from this Presbyterian Scottish minister named Alexander Hislop, and his stuff today on the internet just gets recycled by people. Oh, that's pagan, and that's pagan, and that's pagan. So we want to know. If something's pagan, we don't want anything to do with it. But if something's not pagan, then we want to hold on to it. And anyway, so I tried to do that with, I tried to de-paganize Christmas. It was actually about the time that Christmas started to be celebrated, but it was Tertullian who was trashing Christians that used wreaths, because that did come from paganism. And it wasn't a Christmas thing at the time. Natalie loves wreaths, and some of you love wreaths. But you've got a second century church father that's railing on Christians that won't give up their wreaths. So anyway, we dealt with that at Christmas. Natalie feels that she has that compromise in her life that we have. I'm kidding. Anyway. All right. So let's just, we'll face the fact that for millions of Americans, Easter is not a pagan holiday. It's just a secular one. Okay? It's not like Halloween, where pagans and occultists are actually trying to resurrect Samhain, which is a druid, pagan, demonic thing. That people, when kids are going out and they're getting eggs and going on Easter egg hunts and wearing green and all that stuff, it's secular. They're not actually out there doing anything that is knowingly pagan. Okay? And you're going to see that bunnies and eggs, even though, yes, they've been used as symbols in paganism and whatever else, they were also used as early Christian symbols. I'm going to get to that in a minute. But anyway, I just want to, don't like when you hear that kids are going on an Easter egg hunt, Christians can be so religious sometimes, like, oh, that's, it's just a bunch of kids that are getting hopped up on candy, And it's secular. Now, I'm not saying it shouldn't be redeemed, but it's truly secular. Now, our kids growing up, Emily and Patrick are not here tonight because Patrick is really sick with bronchitis. But Joseph will remember we used to have this thing. We would do it every Easter. Remember we'd open up the little egg carton and open up all the eggs and tell the Easter story. It was obviously we still had it when we left the Middle East, and we used it every year to kind of redeem, Easter, because again, we were told, oh, these are pagan things. Anyway, so I just want to say that up front. All right. So most languages, I already said this, the word for Easter in most languages comes from the Hebrew, and I have the Hebrew there, it's Pesach. And in Greek, it's Pascha. So this is the word for Passover. Now, Spanish, how do you say it? Pascua? Pascua, yeah. So in Spanish, the word for Easter is Passover. Comes from the Latin, which came from the Greek. Italian.
It's two words.
Yes. Okay. But anyway, there it is in Italian. And in French, I don't know how to say it. And it's interesting because in Arabic, I put Arabic because when we moved to the Middle East, I put the Arabic. One of them is Eid al-Fisr, which comes from the Ethiopian, and Fisr is the word in Ethiopian for Passover. But, usually we would call it the Eid al-Qiyamah, which means resurrection, because our Muslim friends, they didn't know what Fisr meant. They know nothing about Judaism or the Passover or anything like that. So anyway, I just want to show you that. And if you go into the Scandinavian languages and Eastern European languages, it's only German and English that have this word Easter, right? All right. So the argument is bunnies and eggs are springtime fertility symbols in pagan religions, historically. Bunnies and eggs, right? The thing is, when little kids are going out and collecting Easter eggs and eating candy, they're not thinking pagan ritual. So it's just secular for them. And it doesn't have that meaning anymore. But yes, it is true that bunnies and eggs were fertility symbols in European paganism and around the world. But rabbits and bunnies were also a symbol of the virgin birth and resurrection in ancient Christian circles. So just so you can see, rabbits, why? Just think about where do rabbits live? They live in the ground and then they come out, right? Right? Like Jesus coming out of the tomb. And the white rabbit, it was a symbol for the virgin birth. And it goes back, I did some research on this, it goes back, like 1,000 years in Christian history where rabbits and bunnies were symbols for the virgin birth and for resurrection. Just in case you want to get all religious, I don't want anything to do with those Easter bunnies. All right, well, let's go back to the original. The original meaning was and virgin birth and resurrection, all right? So, it's interesting. I was discussing this today with John and Denise out in Menifee. I was talking to John about this. He had heard this, that the word Easter is related to ancient Mesopotamian goddess of war and love, Ishtar. Easter, Ishtar, they sound similar. That is the end, the beginning and the end of Easter and Ishtar is that they sort of sound alike.
Weird.
That's it. There's no connection. Ishtar worship died out. The cult of Ishtar died out in 400 BC. Okay, so a good 500 years before Christians are celebrating Easter, and it wasn't even called Easter until hundreds of years later in Europe, there is no connection between Ishtar and the symbol of Ishtar was a lioness and an eight-pointed star, and she was the goddess of war and love. Easter is a festival. Ishtar is a goddess. There's no relationship. So anyway, I know people, oh yeah, don't you know Easter, Ishtar, you know. This is pure Alexander Hislop, two Babylons. He's going back into Mesopotamian religion and trying to trace every, really he was anti-Roman Catholic. And so anything that the Catholics did must be pagan, and he had to find all of his basis for criticizing the two Babylons. Who were the Babylons? There was Babylon, the ancient Babylon, Mesopotamia, and the new Babylon was the Roman Catholic Church. He was a Scottish fundamentalist Presbyterian. Anyway, so a lot of this stuff comes from him, and it's still out there on the internet. All right. So here's where I was caught up, though. I was sure that the word Easter came from Istre, or Ostre, which was the Anglo-Saxon goddess of spring and fertility. And interestingly, I'll get to that in a minute, it was a Christian in the 800s, a historian, who thought that the word Easter came from this. So it was a Christian that was speculating, but scholars today do not believe that that is the origin of the word Easter. Now, a lot of people want to think that Easter had something to do, because modern internet critics and everything's pagan and we need to get back to our Hebrew roots, they want to blame everything on the Council of Nicaea. The Council of Nicaea was about the deity of Jesus. That was the main issue. They were gathering to hammer out, was Jesus fully God or was he a created being, as Arius was teaching. This was why Constantine called the Christians were fighting and arguing, and he wanted to call, now that he's so-called Christian, he wanted to call everybody together and sort this thing out, right? And so that was the issue of the Council of Nicaea. But one issue that they discussed is, when do we celebrate Easter? Do we celebrate it on the Passover itself, which is the 14th of the Jewish month Nisan? That could be any day of the week. Like this year, the Passover falls on like a Tuesday. So there were some Christians that always celebrated Easter on the Passover. So they might celebrate Easter on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whenever the Passover was. But it was decided at the Council of Nicaea that we will celebrate, the entire Christian world will celebrate Easter on the Sunday after the Passover. And that has carried on to this day. So there is something about Easter with the Council of Nicaea. It was a decision. And I'll tell you, the Christians that lived in Turkey, they're like, listen, we're not happy with this. We got our tradition from the Apostle John, and we do not want to change. The Celtic Church in Ireland, they're like, they did not want to change the date that they celebrated Easter. So this was a big deal in the early church. But the emperor said, no, everybody, or the bishops decided, we all need to be celebrating Easter on the same day. Right? So that happened at the Council of Nicaea. I told you it was going to be a history lesson. All right. So what about the word Easter? Because this was my sticking point. All right. So I'll send you these notes. I'll read this. The English word Easter, which parallels the German word Ostern, is of uncertain origin. So there is some debate about this. One view expounded by the Venerable Bede, here's the Christian historian, in the 8th century. So we're talking the 700s, the 8th century. Was it derived from Ostre, the Anglo-Saxon goddess of spring and fertility? There is now widespread consensus. Notice I underlined that and highlighted it, that the word derives from the Christian designation of Easter week, as in albis, a Latin phrase that was understood as the plural of dawn, alba, and became Easterium in Old High German. I don't know if that means anything to you, Andy, or your parents. Easterium of Old High German, the precursor of the modern German and English term. So that is the consensus of scholarship now, is that it came from this word, from Old High German, and it came in to English that way. According to various sources, the name Easter has its origin with a goddess of the Anglo-Saxons named Oster, also Estre, Estara, anyway, those are these names. It is believed that she is the goddess of the dawn and was worshipped in the spring by pagans in Northern Europe and the British Isles. This is what I was under the impression. In the two Babylons, there's this Presbyterian fundamentalist, Alexander Hislop claimed Ostre is actually a name derived from the Babylonian goddess Astarte. See, Hislop always had to get everything back to Mesopotamia. He'd always find a way back there. Hislop extended this connection to include goddesses from around the world, Ishtar, Ashtoreth, Venus, and others. Again, if that's where Easter came from, we wouldn't want to have anything to do with any of that. Our word Easter is of Saxon origin and is precisely the same import with its German cognate, Ostern. The latter is derived from the old Teutonic form of Auferstehen, I'm saying it wrong, but anyway, or Auferstehung, resurrection. The English word Easter is of German-Saxon origin and not Babylonian, as Alexander Hislop falsely claimed. The German equivalent is Oster. Oster, Ostern being the modern-day equivalent, is related to Ost, which means the rising of the sun, or simply in English, east. Oster comes from the old Teutonic form, and there it is, Auferstehen, which means resurrection, which in the older Teutonic form comes from two words, Esther, meaning first, and Stehen, meaning to stand. These two words combined to form Erstehen, I'm saying it wrong, which is of old German origin, form for the modern German word for resurrection. So,
how do you say resurrection?
There it is. She's saying, that's how, what I meant to say. All right. That's how my dad would have said it. All right. So, settling the issue. Easter is in the clear. The word Easter is in the clear. But if you still have any doubts, Resurrection Day is probably the best and is entirely safe. In case you're still, no, I think Bede was right. It is Ulster. It is the fertility goddess. I don't want to use it. What isn't probably workable, though, is to use the word Passover in English, because nobody thinks the word Passover is related to Easter. They might know it's at the same time, but in all these other languages, Spanish, Italian, French, and all these other languages, the word Passover means Easter. But it doesn't mean it in the English. So I know that I was kind of leaning in this direction, and I was always, when I would blog about Easter, which is Passover, you know, I'd always say this. But anyway, I realize I'm just trying to confuse people. You can confuse people. Passover in people's minds is mostly a Jewish holiday. They do not think of it in relationship to Easter. So that's my settling of that issue. All right. Now, when I was delving into this, some of you, has anybody ever heard, well, Jesus wasn't crucified on Friday. He was crucified on Wednesday. Okay? Yeah, anybody ever heard that? That's a popular internet thing that's out there. I remember we had a friend, Donella's dad was into this. He thought about this. And anyway, and you know what? I researched it. I thought, oh, that's interesting because, you know, 3 days and three nights, right? You add it all up. Anyway, I'm going to put this to bed right now. He was crucified on Friday and is raised on Sunday. Okay? There is no basis in history, nothing that would indicate that he was crucified on Wednesday. So look at Luke 24. But on the first day of the week, Sunday, at early dawn, they went to the tomb. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus. It's the road to Emmaus, if you know this, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other. I should wait until next Sunday to be reading this story. But anyway, they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up, walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He, Jesus, asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, why isn't Cleopas used? Why don't we name our kids Cleopas? Yeah. We need to resurrect the name Cleopas. Anyway, asked him, there's so many names in the New Testament. I'm like, why is this name not being... Anyway, asked him, "Are you the only ones visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" What things? He, Jesus, asked about Jesus of Nazareth. They replied, "He was a prophet, powerful word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death. They crucified him, but we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place."
There you go.
It is the third day since all this took place. When did it take place? On Friday, and Saturday, and now Sunday. It is the third day since all this took place. Right? Anyway, some people want to get real, 3 days and three nights in Belly of the Whale, this, you know, the sign of Jonah, thinking it has to be 3 full days and 3 full nights. And what people then realize, I think I get to this, I'll get to that in a second. But on the third day and in 3 days was an idiom in the first century. It didn't mean 3 24-hour days and three 24-hour days, including nights. It was an idiom. And that's what I learned, you know, early on. It's like it was any part of a day was considered a day in that thinking, and that's just the case. But it is the third day since this all took place. All right. I was researching this, and then there's people that want to say Jesus rose on the Sabbath. And they only discovered the tomb Sunday morning. This is another internet myth out there that, you know, because of times and seasons, why would, you know, he would have risen on a Jewish feast day, which would have been the Sabbath, whatever. This is it. Anyway, the Bible itself just slays this myth. The Son of Man must suffer many things and on the third day be raised. When was he resurrected? On the third day. Saturday was the second day, not the third day. Thus it is written that the Christ should suffer and on the third day rise from the dead. You can just answer this objection with Scripture. God raised him on the third day and made him appear. Acts 10. And then he was raised on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures. So in case anybody's ever told you, I think Jesus rose from the dead on the Sabbath, and they only discovered the tomb empty on Sunday morning, you just give them Luke 9:24 and Acts 10, 1 Corinthians to answer that objection. All right. So this coming week is called affectionately Holy Week. And what I want to do, Natalie, you can send that to everybody right now. Natalie's going to send in our rock group, and if you're not in it, the Signal group, she can text it to you. She's going to send you a document that I'm going to get to in just a second. But anyway, I didn't grow up in a church that commemorated, I mean, it's funny, I did, sort of. I grew up, my mom was Catholic, my dad was Lutheran, and we went to a Presbyterian church. So there was something. I mean, I remember the Presbyterian church that we got married at, actually, is where I grew up, going to church. They did things like on Good Friday, they did like the Stations of the Cross, and they had a little bit of that stuff. But then I got saved, and I went to one of these low churches that, like, anything that looks Christian, we ain't doing it, right? You know, it's like we're getting rid of all the traditions, and, you know, and so kind of pendulum swung over there. So for me, it's been a recovery of what is called Holy Week. But I want our little tribe to view this week as a Holy Week that we are all entering in together. And just like, you know, when it's 4th of July, it's a time where we light off fireworks and we have celebrations to celebrate, you know, the foundation of this great country, right? And at Thanksgiving, we do stuff. Well, Holy Week should be the week that Christians come together about the greatest week spiritually in the life of, in our lives. I mean, it's this week that means that we get to go to heaven. You know? And it's no mystery why it became the number one, the most important, the most central Christian holiday throughout every Christian church. And I find it interesting that in Catholic countries and Orthodox countries, Holy Week is like serious, serious business. I mean, I was doing some research on, what is Siri like living up there? Anyway, hi Siri. Go to sleep, Siri. I don't need you.
I can't sleep. But I enjoy it.
No more questions. Wow. Artificial intelligence.
Wow.
Yeah. Get out of there. I don't want you there.
Stop, Siri.
Stop, Siri.
Okay, say Siri, stop.
Siri, stop.
There's nothing to stop here. Check if the device is on your home Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, we're worried about artificial. All right.
Yeah. Don't say the name anymore.
Okay. I just want to get rid of it. Oh, there it is. All right. We're talking about Holy Week. All right. So I want to walk us through Holy Week. I want us all to just consider, and those of you that were raised Catholic or raised Lutheran or raised in a liturgical church, you know, some of this stuff we're going to dust off, raised Anglican, it's going to dust off some of this stuff, but what I want us to do this week is I want us in solidarity to be experiencing and thinking about the things of this week and encouraging, and that's why I had Natalie send that document, and we'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, so tomorrow is Palm Sunday, and I didn't put the scriptures up. You can, you know, look them up because probably mostly for the space of all this stuff. But anyway, Palm Sunday is tomorrow. So tonight is Palm Sunday night, whatever, because we're not meeting tomorrow. But it is Christ's triumphal entry into Jerusalem, where everybody is laying the palm leaves down and saying Hosanna, which is where we're at between season 4 and season 5 in The Chosen. Anyway, so this is the beginning of Holy Week, I would say, is Palm Sunday, tomorrow. Some would say it starts on Monday, but anyway. So, what happened on Monday is when Jesus cursed the fig tree, and also it is believed that that's where he cleansed the temple and flipped over the tables. Now, there's some debate about, because there seems to be two cleansings of the temple. One at the beginning of his ministry and one at the end. Anyway, I'll let biblical scholars debate that. But anyway, so on Monday, these are the two scriptural passages that are related to Monday. So what I'm going to encourage us to do is actually, just for your Bible reading this week, maybe just reflect on this week and the passages. I'm going to give you those in a minute. Anyway, on Tuesday, Jesus was challenged by the chief priests. He evades ambush. And it's very interesting. I think it'd be great on Tuesday. He gives the Olivet Discourse, Matthew 24. the great end time passage, you know, or the way it's interpreted by most people speaking about the end of the age. But anyway, the Olivet Discourse, Matthew 24, was believed to have been given on Tuesday in Holy Week. So that would be something interesting to read and reflect on Tuesday. Wednesday is called either Holy Wednesday or Spy Wednesday. So, on Wednesday is when Christ was betrayed by Judas to the Jewish leaders. So they conspired, right? That was Wednesday. So I had never heard the word Spy Wednesday. Emma, have you heard it? Never heard this term? Anybody heard the term Spy Wednesday?
Never.
All right. So anyway, so I looked it up. So in reference to Judas Iscariot's intent to betray Jesus, formed on Holy Wednesday, the day is sometimes called Spy Wednesday. The word spy, as used in the term, means ambush or snare. Additionally, among the disciples, Judas clandestinely was a spy, and Wednesday was the day he chose to betray Christ. So, interesting, it's all very disturbing in The Chosen. It's getting less disturbing because when you first met Judas in The Chosen, you really liked this guy.
Yeah.
But the wheels are kind of coming off. They've kind of got him sinking in our estimation. So we're not as endeared to Judas as we were. At first, I'm like, oh, I like this guy. It's going to be terrible that he becomes the Judas, but he's already transforming in that direction. It's very interesting how they portray it. Anyway, I didn't know if anybody heard it called Spy Wednesday, but there it is.
You asked Emma of being from the UK.
Yeah, because the UK, you know, they would often have different designations in English than I'd never heard it. But anyway, I didn't know. All right, so we've talked about this. I've mentioned this, but early Christians changed the fast days that they fasted throughout the year. They fasted not on Mondays and Thursdays as the Jews did, but they changed their fast days to Wednesdays and Fridays. Why Wednesday? And here it is. We fast on the fourth day, Wednesday, indeed, because on it the Jews took counsel for the betrayal of the Lord. And another early church father, for on the fourth day, Wednesday, the condemnation went out against the Lord, Judas promising on that day to betray him for money. I think it's powerful that the early Christians, if they're going to choose 2 days to deny themselves of something, and they chose Wednesday of Holy Week, mm-hmm. the day that the greatest betrayal in history took place. One of Jesus' own disciples basically gave him up for crucifixion. You know, I know some other things happened, but the betrayal. And then, of course, the other day was Friday, and we'll get there. I think everybody can see why Friday became a fasting day, to identify with the price that Jesus paid for us, right? So, Maundy Thursday, Thursday. Now, who's heard the word Maundy Thursday? Yes, okay, we've heard that term, all right? I had no idea, even after I, you know, even when I got ordained as an Anglican and all of it, I must have done it when I was in seminary, but it's just so interesting because I'm going to explain it. It actually comes from French. Anyway, so on Maundy Thursday is when the Last Supper was. It's also when Jesus washed his disciples' feet. Maundy Thursday is actually related to the commandment to wash the feet. I did not know that. Wow. Anyway, and it also is the night, Maundy Thursday, when Jesus was arrested in Gethsemane. And we'll all remember that scene from last year when we watched the Passion of the Christ. That scene at night where he's arrested in the garden, that was Maundy Thursday. So, you see, we have a lot to reflect on this week. Let's do it together and just allow the Lord to speak to us. And when we gather on Good Friday and we gather on Easter Sunday, maybe we can share some of the things the Lord highlighted or spoke to us or revealed as we together contemplated these things. But anyway, here's the explanation of Maundy Thursday. On its own, the word Maundy means the ceremony of washing the feet of the poor, especially commemorating Jesus' washing of his disciples' feet on Maundy Thursday. Recorded around between the year 1250 or 1300, the word Maundy comes from the Old French mandi, in turn from the Latin mandatum, which means mandate or command. Do as I have done. Right? So, there are actually churches today, and I know that on Maundy Thursday, they will do feet washing, but there are actually churches where they take this as a commandment, and they do this as part of their services. They wash feet. I don't know if anybody's ever, I'm sure some of us have been in churches where that might have happened. I'll never forget the time we were at a men's retreat, and I went to wash my father-in-law's feet, and then he wanted to wash my feet. I don't know. And I was really into long-term backpacking at that time. And like literally two of my toenails are gone. And I'm just like, oh, it's gonna be like he's washing Jesus' feet. Anyway, it's terrible. But anyway, we some of us have done some foot washing. But Maundy comes from a commandment to do it. Like, as the example I'm giving you, Jesus said, now I want you to do this, right? And so some Christians, I think it's far greater, because today, washing people's feet does not mean what it did in the first century.
Right.
Because when you live in a part of the world, if you've ever been to the third world, and you're out on dirt roads all day, and you're in sandals, when you come in to a house, your feet are extremely dirty. And so washing feet has a meaning, and us doing it today, it's really anachronistic. It doesn't really make sense because most of our feet are clean. They might smell a little bit if they're in socks, but they're not dirty. It's just not something, and we live in a paved world, so most people don't even have dirty feet. So anyway, so let it go on. Let foot washing go on. I think we can apply it in different ways. Anyway. Good Friday. So, I never really liked the word Good Friday, but, I was told, listen, it was good for us. Wasn't good for Jesus, but what happened on Good Friday was really good for us. But it's very interesting because I'm going to tell you something, and I want to ask Andy and the Germans about this, because it is believed that the word Good Friday actually comes from the German Gott Friday, God Friday. Yeah, so I want to read this. It is also known as Holy Friday, the Great and Holy Friday, or the Great, or together, the Great and Holy Friday, and Black Friday. I could get Black Friday for the name. One theory is that good in Good Friday was derived from God or God's Friday of German origin, God's Friday, and the way the term goodbye comes from a contraction of God be with you, goodbye. Get it? We say goodbye, God be with you.
Right?
Right? Goodbye.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it's actually very cool that when you get the, Godspeed, all this old English stuff, there was a lot of it, but it's actually Good Friday in English is believed to have come from the German. Back then they called Good Friday God Friday, and that it slipped into English this way. So anyway, just so and obviously we know what happened on Good Friday. We know about the crucifixion. Obviously, now, if you weren't here last Easter, I'm going to share the podcast again, because what started on Good Friday after the crucifixion is Jesus went to Hades. And last Easter, I preached about all the stuff he did between his crucifixion and his resurrection, which was a unique. I got a lot of views on my podcast because that's like not your typical Easter sermon. He descended to the dead. and I talked about all the things he preached to prisoners in chains, right? All of the scriptural references to what Jesus did when he went in to Hades, and actually he went to Tartarus, to the abyss, and told those fallen angels from Genesis 6, I got the keys, guys, and I'm emptying this place. You are losers, and your next stop is the lake of fire, where it's been told that who gets thrown into the lake of fire? The devil and his angels. Now, they do come out of the abyss in Revelation chapter 9 at the end of the age. They get released for a bit. Bad time. Anyway, if you're a pre-trib rapture person, you're not around. I don't believe in the pre-trib rapture, so you should probably read Revelation 9 and think, what the heck am I going to do when these things come out of the bottomless pit, when Abaddon is given the key? Anyway, it's Revelation 9. Anyway, that's not... Anyway.
Not now.
Yeah, not now. So,
we'll be ready for that.
Logan's like, what kind of church have I joined? What is this all about? Anyway, so.
Oh, yeah.
But I argue that Jesus ministered to more people between his death and his resurrection than he did in his earthly ministry. Because he ministered, he preached the gospel to everybody. He revealed who he was to everybody who had gone before. Abraham got to realize, you're the fulfillment of my faith.
Wow.
Moses, David, all of them. And the early Christians debated, did he also give the unbelievers, like all the Hindus that were around from that time, everybody from before and all these people that were lost in paganism, did they all get a chance to hear the gospel? I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was his greatest ministry trip ever. And it's called the harrowing of hell. Uh-huh. Is one of it that literally he is. And if you remember in the Passion of the Christ, when the Satan figure is there and Jesus raises from the dead or whatever, and he's down there on his knees
screaming,
he realizes he's just lost his entire, he's just lost all of his captives. Jesus set captives free there as well as here. Anyway, I'm going to send that message back out. If you missed that, that was a good message. We did it in the park. Anyway, so Good Friday was the crucifixion, but it's also the beginning of Jesus' punk rock ministry trip down. And then Saturday is known as Black Saturday. His body's in the tomb, but his spirit is in having a ministry trip of all eternity where Jesus is... I want to watch that reel. When we get to heaven and there's like, hey, I want to go watch a tape. I want to see what Jesus did down there. Some people are like, hey, I want to see the Red Sea part. Okay, yeah, we can check that out. But I personally, I believe this might be some of the greatest footage we'll ever get to see, if it works like that. I don't know how it works. Anyway, all right. So, the trail to victory. This is what I've sent out to everybody. Natalie sent it out, and so I'll just blow it up a little bit because it's hard to see. But it's funny, this church is called Backcountry Church. I'm like, I'm a backcountry skier, so I'm like, there's a church out there like that's like named after backcountry skiing? Like, why do I not know these people? Anyway, so I just went and took something from them, and you have the document. It's called Trail to Victory. So what it is it gives a plan for Holy Week, you know, what to read from Luke and Zechariah on Palm Sunday, what to read on Monday, what to read on Tuesday, what to read on Wednesday, what to read on Thursday, what to meditate on Friday and Saturday, and then Easter Sunday we can, you know, basically leave off. We're going to gather before that. But anyway, my point is, I would just challenge us all to take these Bible reading passages and let this be our Bible reading passages as a church this week, so that we're kind of all on the same page, meditating on some of the same passages, And I would really encourage you, this is for free, I'm just thinking about it right now. Let's read a translation that you haven't read before. I tell you, read a paraphrase, actually. Get away from a familiar passage. Read, you know, I really like the Message, a paraphrase like that. Just to get you out of familiarity. Read something, read another translation that you haven't read. I know that Aaron will read it in the Passion. The Passion has, yeah. No, but, you know, all of these are good paraphrases. They're not really translations, they're paraphrases. But read the passage, you know, if you want to stick to your NASB or NIV or whatever I'm an ESV guy. You know, okay, I'm going to read the Bible, and then I'm going to read the paraphrase, you know. Some of us get
make
religious.
It
yeah, make it legal. We get, Natalie's got to read the Amplified. The Amplified's like a translation on steroids. It's just, yeah, it's interesting. Expanded Bible's another one that's good. I would encourage you to read these things and then allow phrases to pop out at you that maybe you haven't thought of. So let's allow a very familiar narrative this week to actually be refreshed. And then when we gather on Friday night, and we're going to come together, and there's
gathering
good,
here.
We're gathering here. There'll be no food. We'll just have drinks, and we're going to take communion. But we want to reflect on what we've been, you know, meditating on during the week, and obviously we will be focused on Good Friday and the crucifixion itself. All right, so this has been sent out, and I can email it. Just make sure everybody has the same document. All right, because I said send now, and it's been sent. All right, now, my last point, and I've got 13 minutes to wrap this up. If you are ever going to fast, this coming week is the week that you're going to fast, all right? Or you should fast. Okay, now, and I'm going to make this argument. Now, this is Irenaeus. Irenaeus was a grandson of the Apostle John, and he pretty much puts to bed, every Christian was fasting before Easter. It was the length of time that differed. The Paschal controversy, Easter, concerns not only the day. Remember I was saying, do we have Easter on the Passover, or do we have it on the Sunday? But also as regards to the form itself of the fast. For some, consider themselves to fast one day. I'm canceling out one day. We're going to do Friday and Saturday at least. Others 2 days, still others more. In fact, others fast 40 days. That's what I've been doing. And Aubrey has been doing that. And this, well, they go for it. You have been doing 4 days in the week. I don't know who else has been engaging all of it. But anyway, you know, it's like, I have to say, it became the rule later in the church that if you were in the ordained ministry, you were bound to fast 40 days. So I'm kind of like, okay, I'm going to go with the 40 days. That was a decision that the church made corporately. It's like if you are full time in ministry, you don't do a week or 3 days or whatever. You do the 40 days. So anyway, so in fact, others fast 40 days, and this variety among the observers of the fast did not have its origin in our time, but long before it in that of our predecessors. So Irenaeus is talking about, he's writing in the year 180. And he's saying these differences or these practices of fasting before Easter, this originates long before our time. We're going back into the first century, right? Some of our predecessors, perhaps not being very accurate in their observance of it, handed down to the posterity the custom it is has been introduced through simplicity of private fancy. I have no idea what that line means. Sometimes it's Old English. Anyway, so from the Anti-Nicene Fathers. Nevertheless, all these churches lived in peace with one another. In fact, the difference of the fast establishes the harmony of our faith. Okay, now, here's the thing. All Christians fasted at some level before Easter. All of them. The length of time was different. But what we have here is we have that snapshot. So that's why I'm saying if you're ever going to fast, this would be the week to engage in it. Here's another. He therefore charged us to fast these 6 days on the account of the impiety and the transgression of the Jews. Now, this is interesting because for many years before I went to the 40-day fast, I would fast the full week before Easter, commanding us to also bewail over them and lament for their ruin. He appointed to us to break our fast on the seventh day at the cock crowing, which means in the morning, but to fast on the Sabbath day. Not that the Sabbath day is a day of fasting, being the rest from creation, but because we should fast on this one Sabbath day only, when on this day the Creator was under the earth. The Creator was under the earth. So, the only Saturday in the entire church calendar year that Christians fasted was Saturday before Easter. Normally, it was forbidden to fast on the Sabbath, on Saturday. So, it was, and again, I'm just showing you what the early record is. Fast on the days of Easter, beginning from the second day of the week, Tuesday, until the preparation Friday, and then the Sabbath for a total of 6 days. You can see where the 1 week fast. And I would encourage you, listen, I'll cast it in a minute, but anyway, anybody can seek the Lord on this. I'm gonna make a minimal suggestion at the end, but make use of only bread, salt, herbs, and water for your drink. So that's how they fasted, bread, salt, herbs, and water. Abstain on these days from wine and meat, for these are days of lamentation, not of feasting. Those who are able should fast the days of the preparation of the Sabbath entirely, tasting nothing until the cock crowing of the night. For the Lord says, when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, in those days they will fast, quoting Jesus. And the last one here, there is only one Sabbath to be observed by during the whole year, that of the Lord's burial. On that day, men should keep a fast, and I'm sure that means men and women, in case women are like, yeah, rather than a festival. All right. So, 52 minutes, honey, and I'm coming to my final points. So, Natalie, when we were talking about this, and she was talking about how you cast a vision for Holy Week and stuff, she says, you know, cast the corporate vision. And she was saying, you know, so much of our Christianity in the West has become so radically individualistic that we miss out on the corporateness of it. And Natalie was even saying, you know, that's one of the reasons people convert to the religion of Islam, because everything is corporate. You pray corporately, you fast corporately, you go to Mecca corporately. Everything is corporate, right? So anyway, what is our corporate Holy Week plan? Let us all set aside this week, and making Holy Week holy means making it holy. It's setting it aside. Whatever our normal routine is in a week, let us consecrate this week. Starting Monday, let us consecrate this week, set it aside and say, you know, if you need to entirely get off of social media, whatever, let us set aside this week. Yes, I'll check what's happening with March Madness and the scores at night, but anyway, I'm just kidding around. I will. But anyway, let us make, some of you are like stumbled now. It's like, what, does Dave care more about basketball? Yeah. Anyway, but let's make this Holy Week. Let's set it aside and make it holy. Use the Trail of Victory thing that you've been sent. Go see The Chosen season 4 if you haven't seen it yet. Or watch episodes 1 and 2 in your house because we have access. Go see Cabrini, still in the theaters. You want to get challenged this week? How many people have seen Cabrini now? It's unbelievable. Still in the theaters. Powerful movie about this nun. Rewatch The Passion. You know, there's obviously lots of stuff that we could do. I just wrote down a couple of things. All right. Now, we as a church, many of us already are fasting on Monday. So let's just continue that. Fast on Monday for the breaking of the chains of child sex trafficking. If that's your practice on Monday, then you know, that was a mandate. The Lord gave us that. It's a sacred thing. I'll be fasting on Monday. I'd be fasting on Monday just because of it's Holy Week anyway, but Monday is fast day for the breaking of chains of child sex trafficking. As a church, we do that. Many of us. And then I'm calling again, the corporate fast Friday and Saturday, and then we gather on Sunday morning at 9:30. It'll be after the cock crows, to break the fast all together on Sunday morning. And I'll tell you right now, if you know other people are fasting, it makes your fasting easier.
Yep.
You know, when it's so easy, when you're fasting, oh yeah, I'm just doing it individually. Okay, I'm going to go eat. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But when you are entered into it with others, then this is kind of the vision I'm casting for this week. And then the last point I want to make, and I will be done before an hour. Natalie's rejoicing. She said, please, Dave, keep it under an hour. I was asking the Lord, this is personal. So I had gained 25 pounds before I started the Lenten fast. So I was pushing. The way I gain weight, people are like, I can't tell. Some of you probably can tell that I've lost weight maybe now because my face has gotten thinner and I'm wearing clothes that I wasn't wearing before because I didn't want to come in with painted on pants. They're a little tight. But anyway, yeah. You know. So anyway, I was seeking the Lord about this because I don't want to do that. I don't want to because the thing is, when you know you're going into a 40-day fast, you feel like I need to like plump up. It's psychological. So I talked to Natalie about this. I said, you know what, I'm going to set some new goals after Lent. Not just to go back to my sloppy way of eating and gain the weight back, but I'm actually going to do a whole new fitness plan that includes a lot more weight training than I've been doing. My son will be happy. I do a lot of hiking and other stuff for that kind of fitness, but I don't do a lot. But like I just want to cast that to anybody in here that wants to like just change their lives in terms of, I wanted to say this too. If you, especially the men, but if you're not fasting normally and you eat dinner on Thursday night and you fast until Sunday morning, you will lose 12 pounds. 10 to 12 pounds. In 2 days.
The men.
You will lose 10 to 12 pounds. And if you don't believe me, some of you, no, but seriously, I want to be practical here. Some of you, a 12-pound head start would be a great way to move into your new fitness goals, right? But I'm just telling you right now, if you fast, and I'm not talking about intermittent fasting here. I'm talking about you fast. You don't eat food from Thursday night until Sunday morning. You'll be minimally 10 pounds down, maybe 12. What a great way to like launch into whatever your goals are. But anyway, you know, Natalie was just challenging me. She said, you know, Dave, for the sake of our health and for the sake of the rest of our lives, we need to eat better. We need to, you know, and I don't want to be pushing. I'm just being honest. I was like over 200 pounds before Lent started. That is not my fighting weight. you know? You know? So, anyway, so I just want to cast this, you know, because some of you, it's like, you know what? I'm not all that motivated on any of this spiritual stuff, but I'm in it to get into a size, whatever, again, whatever it is. I want to cast a vision that this would be a special week and that we would do it together. And that's 1 hour. So, in Jesus' name, amen. Now, I want to say something else too. One more thing. We're going to go into a time of worship right now. And I know sometimes people are like, oh, the sermon's over, you know, whatever. I just want to let this be the beginning of Holy Week. Press in a little bit in worship. Let's encounter the Lord. Share with somebody, like, gosh, you know what? I really want to, whatever. But let's start Holy Week right now and press into worship.